welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. This is Jessica. I will be your librarian host today, and I am really excited to welcome fellow redhead and author of Blood Sugar. Please introduce yourself and tell everybody about where this book came from.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sasha Rothschild, and this is my debut novel, Blood Sugar. I've been a writer for my whole life, but a couple years ago had an idea in the middle of the night and thought this is a novel. And here we are now. It came out exactly 1 week ago.
So this is like a really interesting book. First of all, I see your website is amazing. I love it. I could play on it forever. It's like, it's simple, but it's beautiful at the same time. And that is probably one of the strangest things I said to an author. Usually we do a little research before each chat. And I was like, okay, I'm going to look at Sasha's website, and it's just beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, the woman who designed it, she so got me. I basically said to her, like, if a 10-year-old girl got to be a serious professional woman, but still had the 10-year-old girl inside her, what would that website look like? So there's glitter and there's bright colors,
it's like a sleepover party.
Yeah,
but it's a professional website.
Yeah.
So much fun. But yeah, so I did notice, though, while I was on your website, that you grew up in Miami, where a lot of this book takes place. I've spent a lot of time down in Florida, and I knew you had to have some roots there because you really nailed it. You just said, though, that the idea for this book came to you in the middle of the night. So this is the story of, let's just kind of get to what it's about. So Ruby is the main character, and right off the bat, you know that she has committed murder more than once.
Yes. Paige, and I think, you know, it's not a spoiler because pretty much page two, we see a young Ruby killing a little boy, and it should be shocking. And then she'll explain it all away and you'll totally be on her side. Maybe.
Maybe. That's my reaction to that when you just said that was, yes, absolutely. But also, it's not what you think, but it kind of is too. So it really depends on how you look at things. But so Ruby is brought in for questioning about more than one murder. And it is the blurb, something like, you know, she's
accused of four murders. She's only guilty of three.
Right. So the question is, which is the one she did not commit, and why did she commit the other three? And is she like an anti-hero? Is she a villain? You know, it really all depends. So it was a really interesting story. And one of the things that I loved about it, and it's something that I think the audience really has to find out for themselves, was I'm reading the book and I'm just like, this book is called Blood Sugar. When is that going to really, really come into play? And there's a few points where you're just like, is it here? Okay, maybe, maybe not. And then finally, you're just like, okay, it's here. And I love it because in and of itself, the title for the book is kind of part of the mystery as to what's going on.
Yes, it very much is. And the way this all sort of came about was my husband in real life is type 1 diabetic. And he wears a continuous glucose monitor. And if he goes very low while he's sleeping, it's really dangerous. Type 1s can actually die. It's called dead in bed. This is all explained in the novel. But a few years ago, his continuous glucose monitor started beeping really loudly to wake him up. He has to have sugar. It woke me up. I woke him up. He ate sugar. He's fine. But I couldn't fall back asleep. And I started thinking, one, how horrible it'd be if he died, of course. But then 30 seconds later, my writer brain kicked in and I was like, well, wait a minute. if he died and the police showed up, would they think I murdered him? Because the spouse is always the first suspect, no matter what, it seems they're always questioned. And I just let my brain kind of go and go and what if and what if. And then I thought, what if I was a murderer? I had murdered people, totally gotten away with it. Now the police are after me for this murder I didn't commit, or killing someone I didn't kill. And that was sort of the beginning of, oh, I think this is a plot for a novel. So that's how that happened at 3 a.m. and setting it in Miami. Miami is so specific and lawless and anything can happen. And it almost seems like nothing's weird there because everything goes
on. Weird. It's like it's decadent and weird.
Yes.
But in a different way than Los Angeles or Las Vegas. It's Miami weird.
Yes, it's a very specific weirdness. So I thought, I've always been really, you know, captivated by my childhood there. And I thought, I'm going to just harness that and set this novel there. So that's the piece. That's how the pieces came together.
Ruby is a really interesting character. I'm not, I wasn't sure what I felt about her through most of it. She was a really complicated character. And there were times when I was on her side, and she was a really good twist on this whole likable sociopath thing that we see. You know, we see it with like Dexter, maybe a little bit with like Hannibal, depending. And then there's like the sociopaths that probably aren't supposed to be likable, but people like anyway. But with her, she was like the most human sociopath ever.
And she'll say she is, you know, she'll say she is not a sociopath.
She will. And that's kind of my thing. But like, I was like reading it and I'm just like, that's exactly what a sociopath would
say. Yes, yes. It's true. I wanted to take some tropes of one thing, and speaking of Dexter, and I love those books. I think as a whole, men are allowed to sort of do whatever they want in whatever numbers they want. And when you think about girls being raised, sometimes we're always told, don't weigh over a certain amount, lie about your weight. Lie about your age when you're past 40. Don't admit it. Don't admit how many people you've slept with. There's like all these restraints on women and how much of something we can be. And I started thinking that that would be very interesting with a woman murderer, because Dexter gets to kill somebody every 5 minutes and we love Dexter. But if a woman thought she should kill some people, there would have to be this restraint that we're often sort of brought up with and what that looks like. And that was one of the reasons I chose to sort of delve into that, but also really limiting her. She's not killing people left and right. She's very specific about it. And I think there's something interesting there that does separate her from the Hannibals or the Dexters, or even like the Tony Sopranos, where there's so many killings.
Yeah, she was very, I don't want to say calculated in it, because it wasn't like there was a ton of premeditation, but her reasonings were very clear. But it was an interesting thing to set upon, almost like the whole, also you play a lot with like the police procedural questioning trope as well. Going back and forth between the two was really interesting.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I'm glad it worked. And it's been interesting for me to hear from readers this past week about, there's been a lot of debate about if it's actually a thriller. And I know, you know, we need to market books and we need to call them something and put them on a specific shelf. But it's been interesting because of Ruby, because of the amount of people she kills, because of the way the story unfolds. Is it technically a thriller? Is it just a contemporary novel? Is it a psychological thriller? I'm happy no matter what. I mean, if people are reading it and loving it or hating it or having a strong opinion, that's what I want. So, but I think structurally, it's also an interesting question about, is it a true crime thriller or more, you know, I don't know the answer.
So where did Ruby's name come from? Because I love it.
Ruby has been my favorite name since I was a little girl. And I always wished my name was Ruby. I just thought it was so pretty. And so it's just been this name that I thought as I started writing, I was like, I'm going to make this, this is going to be Ruby. This is going to be my sort of wish in a certain way, wish fulfillment-y fictional character who very much knows who she is, does what she does and doesn't regret anything, which I think is, there's a certain power in that, although it can be scary for sure. But I just started thinking about the kind of woman who would come home from a party and never second guess. Did I say the wrong thing? Did I wear the wrong shoes? Did I, just somebody who's just so self-assured.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's right? And so yeah. That sort of, but then I took that idea and blew it up to, okay, so she murders people, but still is very self-assured, because I just wanted to take what we can all relate to and just really make the stakes even higher.
She also has, I mean, a non-murder related moral compass, which I thought was interesting too. You know, she does, and I believe she says this herself, you know, she does form relationships. Right? She does get married to somebody who she does love very much. And then there's Jasula, who is her housekeeper, but they have a longstanding relationship where, you know, she really does care about her and she helps her out. And I thought that all of that was kind of a nice touch, just in this whole like deconstructing Ruby and trying to figure out, but what I myself as a reader felt about her.
Yeah, it's complicated. And I love that I wanted it to be complicated. I hope that readers could feel, oh, I could be friends with Ruby or I could be Ruby, but then also absolutely horrified and chilled by the fact that, oh, they could have a friend that like quietly murdered somebody and they don't know. Because I think that what makes her interesting is it's not so black and white. It's not easy to say she's good or she's bad. And as she tells us her story from her own perspective, you know, how much do you believe her? How much do you trust her? I believe her, and I think she's telling us what she thinks is the truth. So I think, and she does care for people. And another thing I touched on, which is kind of a literal trope that I twisted, was oftentimes sort of serial killers we know are very cruel to animals when they're younger, and this is sort of a gateway. But I wanted Ruby to be very kind to animals as a young child and actually go straight for killing a human. Which you don't often see, and then literally used saving a cat, which is part of sort of screenwriting. There's this great book, Save the Cat, where if you have an unlikable character, you have them save the cat in the first 5 minutes, have her literally save a cat, but then really the cat becomes a big part of plot and story and some of the mystery. So to use the cat, not just as a character, you know, pushing her into the likable side.
And I'm glad that you mentioned Save the Cat, because I actually have that here in my notes, that's, you know, that's been coming up a lot lately, and a bunch of people have been discussing that book specifically. So one more person I really just wanted to talk about in the book was Gertrude, Ruby's mother-in-law, who, again, has her own set of issues.
Yes, I thought, you know, there's this sort of very typical, oh, the mother-in-law, oh, the mother-in-law is coming to visit, and sort of like everyone doesn't really like their mother-in-law idea, and really turn that so it's not just about my meddling mother-in-law, but it's about a mother-in-law who herself feels like she was a terrible mother and how that would affect a marriage. An adult marriage. And I thought that was a very interesting way to look at a woman who sort of feels, oh, I'm losing my son to this marriage, but actually I was never a good mother to begin with. And I don't know that I've seen a lot of that in that way. And I also wanted her to be absolutely scary and smart and could stand up against Ruby to a certain extent. So there was someone who was truly the adversary, where the police are trying to prove Ruby's guilty and put her behind bars, but the police aren't totally wrong or unlikable. And I wanted Gertrude to very much be the villain, assuming Ruby's the anti-heroine.
Assuming, because that is up to the reader, I suppose, to figure out themselves. So yourself, what kind of books do you like to read?
I read, I'm all over the place with things I like to read. I love reading memoirs. I love historical fiction. Like one of my, maybe this isn't even correctly saying historical fiction. One of my favorite books from the past few years was All the Light We Cannot See. It's just so beautiful. So the such character development. Another one of my favorite novels the past few years, which is not historical, but sort of historical fiction, is Circe, where it was this incredible take on this maligned.
That was,
you know,
really
witch.
Good, right?
So
yeah, that
good.
Was a really good one.
Just, I love this idea of letting someone tell their story in a way that we haven't heard for thousands of years. And I am reading The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue right now, which is really fun. So I think I like all sorts of things. I'm always a Jane Austen, sort of like I grew up on Jane Austen and Anne Rice. Those were my two like anchors when I was 12 years old. Very different voices, but strangely morphed together, kind of made who I am. So that's what I'm reading.
So are you going to, are you working on another book?
I would, yes. The plan is I will absolutely write another novel. I had a wonderful experience with this. I am thinking about possibly a sequel. I think Ruby could live on.
Nice.
I have some other ideas. Yeah. And at the same time, I'm continuing to write for TV, which I also love. So I'm going to try and do it all, keep doing it all.
So I noticed you've written for quite a lot of television. How does it differ writing a novel versus writing for television? And would you like to talk just a little bit about what you have written on and what you are writing on?
Yeah, I moved to Los Angeles to be a television writer. I love television so much. And growing up when TV was not even very good, I just loved checking in with characters once a week and just getting to know them over time. I have written on a lot of shows with complicated women. I think it's sort of my go-to. Carrie Diaries was a lovely younger version of Sex and the City. And Glow was an amazing show to work on for Netflix. Right now I am running a new Netflix series called Exo Kitty, which is a spinoff of Jenny Han's amazing books To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Oh, that's great. Those books are so popular.
Yeah. So that's, so with TV, I often am, I'm comedy. I'm a little bit lighthearted. I've never written a mystery before or a crime thriller. So my brain for the novel really kicked into a whole other area. And it was very exciting for me to explore a darker side. And also the big difference, at least for the first novel, was I had all the time in the world. I was sitting down and writing it for myself whenever I could. Whereas with TV writing, it's unbelievably rigorous schedule. So it's, you know, you write, you get it out the door, you produce it, and then you do it again. But I loved both. I love both feelings. Sitting on a Saturday in my sweatpants, just I can spend 6 hours writing,
yeah,
and not realize, oh my God, I have to turn the script in, you know, 5 minutes.
Funny that you say back when you were younger, TV wasn't great. You know, I'm about the same age as you. And it was just very different. We're kind of in a really weird golden age of television. I know people are saying that a lot, but I feel like we're coming to this really interesting point where books and television are both, at least I know I haven't heard as much people talking about, you know, like necessarily that, obviously the adaptation of is going to be horrible, because I feel like television adaptation has really changed the way that books are adapted for TV.
Yes.
And retroactively, as a librarian who also loves television, I see a lot of people who maybe catch a story on the television version and are driven to the source material. I think TV is very different than it was when I was younger. I am 42. So, you know, there was like when I was younger, sitcoms were really big, a lot of the canned laughter. Yeah. But then I see some similarities in things like true crime, for instance, like unsolved mysteries or, you know, whatever, was it a current affair, like whatever those shows were, which would just sensationalize these horrible stories. And I myself am a true crime person. I think as a kid, that is sort of what like planted those little kernels in my head, just like.
And I still think The Golden Girls is one of the greatest shows ever. The writing,
good,
the acting, it holds up. And just I remember as a 10-year-old watching who I saw as these old ladies, and by the way, they were not even that old.
I know
that I could connect so strongly with these old ladies who were friends. I thought there's this magic here about TV. And I think what's happened, and this is my opinion, is in television, the writer is the boss. In movies, the director is the boss. And I think what's happened the past 10 years is a lot of movie writers, good writers, novelists go into TV to try and create the world they want to create and be the boss of that world. And it's allowed the writer to really envision and put out what they want versus a director coming in, kicking the writer off set and it being the director's feature film. So that's a big shift. And I think that's part of the reason why television has gotten so good the past 10 years.
That's actually really interesting. And I had never thought about it that way. Wow. Yeah. And The Golden Girls was fabulous. In fact, you talk about writing for the Carrie Diaries. I've heard The Golden Girls almost being described as pre-Sex in the City.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because really, like, I remember being younger and one of my friends telling me they weren't allowed to watch The Golden Girls, and I didn't understand why. And then when I got older, I was like, oh, okay, that's why. You know, there's my naivety, not realizing what they were talking about.
Right. I mean, yeah. Blanche is always making jokes about being on her back. And there's so much, they really talk about sex and they talk about AIDS and they talk about menopause and they talk about so many really serious issues that and amazing issues that it was sort of groundbreaking and wrapped in this unbelievable dialogue that sort of slipped under the radar of people getting too upset about it. So I think that show really that show is a big sort of moment
I
for
think
me.
Night Court was also underrated, I feel like.
And that's coming back. They're redoing a Night Court right now.
Oh, I'm very interested. I was very sad when Harry Anderson passed away. I'm very interested to see how that's going to go. Bringing it to television adaptations and Blood Sugar, is there any fictional sociopath you would like to see Ruby go toe-to-toe with?
I am a big fan of Joe from You. I just love Joe so much.
Yes, not in my mind, I'm writing a fan fiction of Ruby versus Joe, and that.
Yeah, that would make me very happy. I think that they would actually really like each other and possibly just be, you know, end up having some shenanigans together, maybe fall in love. I don't know. But yeah, that would be an amazing fan fiction partnership.
It would probably be best if they don't fall in love.
Yeah.
Just respect each other's work.
Yeah.
I see that too. All right. Well, this was so much fun to chat with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful.
Once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest today was
Sasha Rothschild.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.